I go through a series of four or five of them. So check this one out first. And then this one. Got that. This one. And this one. And last, this one. Those are just random memes that I picked off the internet. There are lots and lots out there like that. And I have to tell you that I don't like them very much, and it isn't because their purpose is to poke fun at people who believe that what I believe. I don't like them because I think they serve to create a false narrative about Christians. That we're dumb. That we just sort of blindly follow along with religion because we cannot cope with our mortality. That we really don't pay attention to history. We don't have any knowledge of scientific facts. And if we did, we would ignore them anyway. That we're not very smart people. And I think there is an effort on the part of unbelievers to paint Christians in that way, as being in our enlightened age just a little backward and probably not well educated. My problem with that is that I just know it's not true. Obviously, you can always find exceptions to the rule, but I don't know very many of them. I will tell you that the Christians I know don't take their faith lightly. They are very serious. They don't just follow along with religion because they can't cope with their mortality. In fact, they're willing to ask the tough questions. They do read the history and they consider the science. And I promise you, when they counter something that seems to be in conflict with what Christianity teaches, our worldview, I can tell you what happens. My email gets assaulted. Or I start getting text messages. I have a lady that worships with us that, I mean, she like sends it. Do you ever get like a 12-page text? It's like this long in the middle of the day. I want to text her back and think, did you think I was sitting around sipping coffee? I need a month to work on this thing. I like that though, because it says to me, she is very serious about what she believes. And those are the Christians that I know. And I bet they're the people that you know too. Christians that I know are willing to tackle the tough questions. We did it on Sunday, didn't we? The atheist's most frequently used argument against faith is, why is there so much suffering in the world if there's a good God ruling over the world? We talked about that. We didn't ignore that question. We wrestled with it. You guys, over the last few months, have been working this question of how we know the Bible is really inspired by God. How do we know people didn't change it? Those are great questions. Kids are working on Bible prophecy tonight. What are the evidences for that? But it's the perception that unbelievers want to paint for us, even though... some of the most well-known unbelievers know that Christians are not dumb. Can I illustrate that for you? So we've been beating up Richard Dawkins all week, right? That's okay. He's probably the most famous atheist in the world today, and he makes a lot of money being the famous atheist, so he deserves to get beat up on a little bit. So anyway, I'm going to give you a little video clip of Dawkins ridiculing Christianity. I've got two back-to-back. Watch this one first. Listen to what he says. So he compares Christians to flat earthers and people who believe in the stork theory. That's where babies came from. You see it? So he ridicules Christians as being, notice, not real scientists. So what I know is that Dr. Dawkins knows better than that. He knows that Christians, believers are not dumb. And the second video clip will illustrate that. You'll notice he's younger in this clip, which means he already knew this and had this experience prior to what you just watched. But he's going to be asked a question by a reporter. Oddly enough, a believer who is masquerading as a reporter, who asks him in an interview, what is a really, really important question connected to the theory of evolution, one of their most basic issues. She's asking him if he knows of any situation where a genetic mutation increased the information in the genome. That's kind of a complicated evolution question, but it's vital to their theory because they say mutations make us better and continue the process. So they're talking in British accents. When I'm hearing that, I need subtitles, and I don't have those for you. So that's the question being asked. His response is what I want you to see. So watch this. The silence is just beautiful, isn't it? Okay, and so what he does is he asks her to stop the camera. And then when they come back on, I'm saving time tonight, he gives an answer that has nothing to do with the question she raised. What point am I making to you? He knows. In fact, the truth is he's just been had by a believer who asked him a question about evolution. He obviously is not in a position to answer. I think there is a reason, though, and in that first video he kind of showed his hand, why unbelievers want to label us as dumb. It's because they don't want to have to deal with us. You heard him. He does not want to be on a stage with someone who knows their stuff and debate the evidence. If I could just tag on to that, isn't it interesting that they don't even want our children in public schools to be told that there's an alternative? You would think if there is a mountain to prove evolution was true and Christianity could be dispelled from the earth if people just looked at the evidence, why not let it all be taught in the classroom and let's see what evidence you have for each one? They don't want you to even talk about Christianity or Genesis' view of creation in the classroom. And it makes me wonder, what are they afraid of? If they've just got such an airtight case, what they are trying to do is silence our voice. And so I put their scripture back up from 1 Peter 3 and verse 15. In a time like this, our responsibility is to speak up and to be ready to give an answer. And as I said to you on Sunday night, increasingly on more and more fundamental pieces of the disciples' worldview. So in the time that I have left tonight and tomorrow, I would like to give you a few pieces of evidence. You will know going in that we're not going to begin to say everything that could be said, right? Because you could literally spend years studying all of the evidence. I'm just going to give you a little piece, beginning tonight with a piece of evidence that will support this most basic piece of our worldview. I want to talk about the evidence that I think demonstrates in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And so we begin with that first piece of the Christian's worldview. There is a God who is the creator. I believe that Genesis 1:1 has powerful evidence out there for us to consider that demonstrates what is claimed in Genesis 1:1 is absolutely true. And I would add with emphasis, far better than the alternative that the unbeliever is offering. And so I want to see if we can get that done tonight in the little bit of time we have left, okay? We're going to have to kind of go quickly through all of this. So let's begin right there in that place. I said that what we have in Genesis 1 is better than the alternative that the unbelievers offer. So that raises the question. This world around us exists, right? I could look outside the window and see the plants that are growing. There's probably someone with a dog in their backyard over there. There's living things everywhere. This room is filled with living things. And serious-minded people look around at all that and they ask, where did it come from? How do we account for this world of living things that we see all around us? And of course, if you ask an unbeliever that question, what's he going to say? How does the atheist explain the world? evolution. That's exactly right. They're going to say, well, let's go back to the theory popularized by Charles Darwin back in the 1800s, the theory of evolution, that basically says living things began billions of years ago, because we have brilliant ways of calculating billions of years back in ancient history. That was meant to be sarcastic. And in this puddle full of chemicals. And somehow it worked out that all the chemicals you need to form a life form were there in that puddle, and then something happened and the first self-replicating cell came alive. And then nature went to work on that. It mutated. Survival of the fittest was a mechanism that intervened and helped the best of the species survive. And just over billions of years, we evolved and evolved and evolved until here we are. Man, the crowning piece of that evolutionary process. That's their story in a very brief form. Now listen, I think it's very important to get familiar with that story. Please do not discourage your kids from studying evolution. Encourage them to study evolution. Because the truth is, folks, the more you dig into science and the more you understand about the theory, my suspicion is you will grow less and less satisfied with it, because lots of people do. First of all, if we're going to say that nature did us and everything that lives around us, I start wondering about the amazing systems that are at work in my body and yours. You ever given any thought to that? I mean, if we had to run off on a tangent tonight, and I would get deeply into time trouble, we could talk about like your brain, the greatest computer ever. We could talk about how your eyes are working. You guys are looking up there at that slide. You're processing that image and those words, and you're linking them together and tying together. Your brain is doing that instantaneously. How did the eyes feed the brain that enable you to translate that information and combine them with my words so that you can understand what's being taught? Isn't that amazing? And all I've talked about are your eyes and your brains, and we haven't started with plants and animals, because within those living creatures, there are amazing systems at work as well. I have to tell you that I am a fan of woodpeckers. Don't ask me why, but I have studied a little about woodpeckers in doing my work, and they are just marvels of design. I'll play this little video for you. I had never thought about the fact that if you were to take a long thing attached to your brain and pound it against a hard piece of wood, that could present problems. Don't ask me why I never thought about that before, but yeah, how does a woodpecker take that long piece of bony structure attached to the end of his face and ram it into a tree without his brain exploding? Once somebody pointed that out to me, I thought, that is a pretty good question. And the truth is, his head has shock absorbers connected. I'm using the word, I'm a car guy, shock absorbers. I'm just, you plug that in, whatever's the right technical language here. I'm not a scientist. Anyway, shock absorbers. And the coolest thing is, if you watch, he's got these flaps that come down over his eyes. Did y'all notice that? Why does he need those? Sawdust, that's right. Wear your safety glasses when you're using the chainsaw, right? He's got built-in safety glasses. Isn't that amazing? So I will tell you, the more that we work on that, and the more you get familiar with the amazing systems at work and living things, the less and less you will be satisfied with the idea that nature did this all by itself. It's just kind of hard to imagine, right? Nature tends to make messes when it's left to itself, not things make things better and orderly. My yard is a great example of that. When I get home from this trip, my yard has been left alone now for 10 days. It's going to be beautiful, right? That's nature, folks. That's how it works. And so this whole idea that over time, if we leave nature to itself, it's going to create on its own amazingly complex and well-designed things, I don't know. I'm just not happy about that. That doesn't really work well for me. But that's not their biggest problem. Because what we wanted to know, the question was about the beginning. And you do realize when we began with evolution, we didn't go to the beginning, did we? Which is typically where they go. They go to the puddle with the chemicals. But my question is, wait. Let's talk about the puddle. Where did it come from? How did the chemicals get in there? In fact, let's not just talk about the puddle. Let's talk about the planet that the puddle is sitting on. How did the planet get here? And then backing out a little further, in fact, just the whole universe in which this one planet with the puddle and chemicals exists, how did that get here? And of course, they have an answer for that too. How did they say it all began? Big Bang. There was this grand explosion right back at the beginning. That's not back far enough. You still see the problem, right? Because to have a Big Bang, you got to have some stuff. You have something to blow up, matter. You got to have something for the explosion itself, energy. And some kind of trigger, ignition, to make it all happen. So I don't want you to tell me about Big Bang or universe or planets or puddles. I want to know that starting material, the matter, the energy, the trigger for the explosion, where did those things come from? Do you know what current theory is among atheistic evolutionists about where the first materials came from? Here's the argument. First, there was nothing. And then out of the nothing came something that started the process. Why are y'all laughing? Because it's just absurd, isn't it? And y'all are thinking, surely, surely that is not true. So I brought you a video because I never miss an opportunity to trash Richard Dawkins, and fortunately, he helps us out on this because he talks about this very thing. So let me allow him to speak for himself. Now, I have to confess, I find myself for the first time agreeing with Richard Dawkins. My favorite part of the whole video is he's engaged in this debate with a Catholic priest. You saw that, right? And he makes the point about this something that came out of the nothing, and the audience laughs at him. And he doesn't get it. He doesn't understand why that's funny. Where is the science for that? At what university, and what was the doctor's name who studied and established as fact the nothing or the something from nothing theory? Where did that happen? What experiment has reproduced that? Where can we go and read the data on that experiment? Where did it happen? You know the answer to that, right? Nobody's done that. That's what critics call a just-so story. Folks, they've just pulled that out of thin air. There's no scientific evidence for that. Certainly nobody was there at the beginning to observe it. In fact, I'll tell you what it is. Magic stuff like getting something from nothing, that's the stuff of fairy tales, isn't it? So, when we are ridiculed for believing that in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, before you let somebody laugh at you about that, just remember that for the beginning, their theory is, first there was nothing, and then out of that spontaneously jumped something. I'm just going to contend, brothers and sisters, that I think the argument of Scripture is more reasonable. Scripture says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And then, in Psalm 19 and verse 1, the psalmist says, the heavens are telling the glory of God. Look, you could see Him there. In Romans 1 and verse 20, Paul says, His invisible attributes have been clearly seen through what has been made. The design of our world, the amazing systems at work in living things, they shout for a grand designer behind it all. Someone really smart and capable had to be behind these things that we see around us today. And I would just ask you, what makes more sense to you? That somewhere out there, there's a grand designer who made all of this stuff, or first there was nothing and out of that came something? You can choose. But I think believe in God is easily the more reasonable. Now, I'm not a scientist, and I try not to pretend to be one. I'm just like probably most of you. I read what I can read and learn what I can learn about this stuff. So I thought I would add to our evidence tonight the testimony of a man who is legitimately a scientist. I want you to become familiar with Dr. Dean Kenyon. Dr. Kenyon is a serious scientist. At least if you judge him by his credentials, he is a stellar scientist. He did his undergrad work at that little cool school, the University of Chicago. And then he got a PhD from Stanford in biophysics. He was a postdoctoral fellow at Berkeley. You know, these bastions of conservatism. And then went on to become a professor of biology at San Francisco State University. Okay? So he's a left coast guy. Dr. Kenyon is also an evolutionist. In fact, his area of specialty was chemical evolution. I already told y'all I'm not a scientist, right? So some of you really know sciences. Please don't laugh at me because I'm kind of trying to explain what he did, and I may or may not get this right, okay? But he researched the chemical processes necessary for that first living thing to be alive, the proteins forming amino acids, all of that process. If you are an evolutionist, you've got to find some way to explain how nature could do that all by itself. And so he was studying chemicals in the cell and how they would have to come together in just the right way so that life could exist, and then explain how nature did that all by itself. Now, I have to tell you, over the last 150 years, that has become a problem, because scientifically, we have made great advancements and we have been able to look inside the cell. And what scientists have discovered is that what looked like just like a blob of matter to Darwin was anything but. That there's a whole world going on inside that cell. And then in the last few decades, of course, the big discovery has been DNA. And I just have to tell you folks, DNA has become a huge problem for atheists, because somebody discovered it's got this DNA in us that's coded with thousands and thousands and thousands of bits of information that makes cells do what they do and make us who we are. And so another problem then becomes you've got to explain DNA and how all that original information got in there before you had a living being to pass it on. And so Dr. Kenyon was specializing in that field of study. In fact, he wrote a best-selling textbook that was used to advance his theory. I forgot the name of it. I've got to look back and look. Biochemical Predestination was the title of his textbook. 5 years after publication, it began to get very interesting, because his students started asking questions. And some of them he had problems answering. In fact, one of his students brought him a book eventually. A book that critiqued the findings in his textbook, Biochemical Predestination. Now here's where I learned something about Dr. Kenyon. I learned that he was an honest man. Because he didn't bully his students into silence. He didn't fail them and send them out of his class. He said, I took the book, and over the summer I read it, and I considered their arguments, and I'll let him finish the story. Now, I want you to think carefully about the process that led him away from evolution. This is not some religious guy going to church on Sunday trying to find a way to cope with his mortality, right? Where was this guy when he began to reach his conclusions? What was he doing? He's researching and he's working in a lab. He's looking at the scientists. Nobody's going to say Dean Kenyon is dumb and just can't cope with his mortality. What this guy did is he looked at the evidence, researched it far deeper than I've ever done it. And his conclusion was, there is no way that nature left to itself could do the chemical things necessary for life to exist. And he said, it just became clear to me, there had to be intelligence behind all of this. What led him to that conclusion? It was the science. wasn't reading a Bible passage, folks. He looked at the science, he looked at the design, and said, this requires intelligence. And it was a path that took him away from evolution and ultimately made him a believer. He believes in God like you and I believe in God, and believes in the creation process described in Genesis just like you and I did. I told you a minute ago that DNA is a big, big problem for these guys. You heard him talk about, we have to account for the beginning of genetic information. It's not just the DNA is there. If you're an evolutionist, you have to explain how nature did DNA starting with nothing. And that is such a huge problem that even some great atheistic evolutionary minds are beginning to look around to find a designer. In fact, would you be surprised if I were to tell you tonight that even our old buddy, the famous atheist Richard Dawkins, because of this evidence, has opened himself up to the possibility of a designer? Y'all don't believe that, do you? See, that's why I brought all these videos, because I can't do any better than letting him speak for himself. So listen to Richard Dawkins, the great atheist, argue for intelligent design. So first of all, you notice he said that the aliens just couldn't jump into existence out of nothing. Yeah, this was the guy earlier who had the something from nothing argument, right? Being consistent is not something that Professor Dawkins has felt a great need to do. However, you really need to ask yourself the question, why is one of the most popular, well-known atheists in the world opening himself up to the possibility of a designer for life? And the answer to that question, brothers and sisters, is because the more we learn in science, the more improbable it becomes that nature could have done life. And so unbelievers have had to look somewhere else. Nature isn't going to do it. But you'll notice Professor Dawkins was not willing to open himself to the idea of God. In fact, before he will even consider God, what will he consider? Aliens. Of course, we have a lot of evidence for that, right? We've had those laboratory experiments that demonstrate there is life on other planets, and then there's Area 51 and all that. I won't even go there. Okay. So actually what he does for us in that wonderful video, if you've never seen Ben Stein's program, Expelled, get it, watch it. Mr. Stein does an outstanding job defending the basic pieces of our worldview. And that clip is from that video. But what he does is he exposes Dawkins and many unbelievers for what they really are. Folks, this is not about the evidence. Why is it that he's willing to open himself to the idea of an alien, but he's not willing to open himself to the idea of God? And there's a simple answer to that question. Unless an alien is holding a phaser to your head, making you comply, I'm not accountable to an alien, right? I don't have to do what the aliens tell me to do. And so Dawkins is open to embrace even aliens for which there is no evidence because, well, what if he embraces God? Then the dominoes begin to fall. Because if there is a God who is the creator, then we are under his authority. He has a right to tell us what to do, which then opens us up to this book for which there's an amazing amount of evidence that it had to have come from God. And all of a sudden, you've got to start doing what God said. And so in an effort to avoid that, unbelievers will go to anything else, even aliens, to avoid believing in God. So, I started all of this by pointing out how the world is determined to ridicule me and you and make us feel foolish for what we believe. And so when you hear someone like Dawkins comparing God to the giant spaghetti monster in the sky, or believing in genies or fairies or pink unicorns, remember to ask yourself, Well, what do they have? What are they bringing to the table? And basically it is this. First there was nothing, and then something, and then the aliens came. I don't know. I just think Genesis 1-1 is a lot easier to believe. I got about 2 minutes. Can I answer a question? Field a comment from anybody? Yes.
I wanted to remind everybody that Josh pointed out very well early in the year that tonight we're not like Peter on Pentecost talking about Old Testament history. We're like Paul in Athens.
Yes.
Talking to them about their world.
Yes. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. It is increasingly an unbelieving world where the gap between us is larger and larger. Changes the way we approach people. Did I see another hand? Yes, sir. Yeah, if you are interested in this kind of stuff, YouTube needs to be your friend. Because there's some wonderful things. Dr. William Lane Craig has done some excellent debates with unbelievers. Dr. Frank Turek, we've already played a clip from him, has done some excellent work. Ravi Zacharias, am I getting that right? Okay, I'm not a follower of him. Another guy that's out there. And the beauty of it is you can get online, and instead of just hearing people talk, you can actually watch them go toe-to-toe. And see the evidence presented by both sides in a debate-styled forum where you have an opportunity to decide what makes more sense. Last word, real quick.
Do you ever get the question, the rebuttal back about where did God come from? And if so, how do you answer that?
Some really great stuff on YouTube dealing with that sort of philosophical question. But if the universe was created, you have to have a cause outside of the universe itself. And so that is what God is to us. He is the uncaused first cause that had to be outside of time and space as we know it in order to bring it into existence. So I don't have a problem with an uncaused first cause. I think you have to have that if the universe is going to be created. Again, the problem on the other side is they have, as Dr. Dawkins would say, literally nothing. Okay? Thank you all very much. Tomorrow night, we're going to look at the Bible and give you a little bit of evidence that I think tells us that the Bible certainly came from God. And that's